DW Africa Link.
Look around you. We are surrounded by war and conflict in Africa, Asia, and Europe. And yet, the United Nations Security Council, UNSC, is expected to maintain international peace and security. So, what are the challenges of the Council, and why is the African Union pushing for UN Security Council reforms? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
The United Nations Security Council was established in 1945 as one of the six main organs of the United Nations, UN. It was created after the Second World War to prevent, end, or address conflicts. It has five permanent members, each with veto power. That's the US, Russia, UK, France, and China. Then there are non-permanent members with no veto power. No African country has any real power. That's why the African Union, AU, has been pushing for better representation, including potentially securing permanent seats with veto power for African countries. This would give Africa a stronger voice in global security matters. But what are the chances of that happening? For more on this, let's bring in Chen Oba, Minister of Information and Civic Education for the Republic of Sierra Leone. He's played several roles in the United Nations. Hello and welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, Eddie.
Thanks so much for coming on board. Also here is my colleague and DW correspondent, Isaac Kaleji in Ghana. He's been digging into the matter for a while now. Hello, Isaac.
Hi, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on board. Mr. Ba, let me start with you. Your country, Sierra Leone, is current chair of the UNSC. How are you using the platform to address the underrepresentation of Africa on the Council?
Sierra Leone currently enjoys the privilege after a 53-year absence to be back on the United Nations Security Council. And as you said, in the month of August, we do have the presidency. Our signature event during the presidency was a call for reform for the Security Council. And it was attended by no less a person than His Excellency, the President of Sierra Leone himself, to show that this is not just a matter of state importance, but we wanted to demonstrate that this is something that is critical to Africa's future, to our calls for reform, and to address what our president said so eloquently in his address to the Security Council, historical injustices. I think the case we have made is very clear. Africa is home to over a billion people, about 28% of the world's population, and yet on the Security Council, we have no permanent seat, we have no voice, and it's a product of an outdated colonial system that can no longer truly say it's a reflection of today's world, of today's power systems, and what the president of Sierra Leone and the rest of Africa, because what we're doing as a state is to convey the common position of the African Union, which has been articulated first in 2005 when the African leaders came together and said, we must have equitable representation and we must have our voices heard. The CTN, which is the common position of African countries calling for reform of the Security Council as well, that our president has the privilege of chairing. So I think we made a very forceful case. We wanted for the first time, and this is, by the way, we thought it was pretty remarkable that it was the first time that the issue of this reform and Africa's representation was being tabled as an agenda item at the Security Council itself. We're very pleased that we had a lot of support from pretty much all the members that spoke, from the United States, from even China, from Russian Federation, and others who spoke up, said, yes, indeed, this is an issue that must be addressed. And they really commended Sierra Leone and the rest of Africa for coming out so clearly on this issue.
So just to be clear, what exactly are you pushing for? And how?
So two major things. One is we're saying that with Africa's stance, Africa must have two permanent seats on the United Nations Security Council. That would be a fair reflection of the positioning of Africa and that the Security Council itself needs to be reformed to reflect this. The second major ask is that we must get rid of the veto. It's no longer is a tool that is relevant, and it's actually continued to stall development agenda and other security agendas that's been brought in front of the council. Now, our position is that if the Security Council decides that it's important to keep the veto, then Africa must also have the veto as well, with the permanent seat that we'll have on the council. So those are the two major asks that we have made in terms of calling for reform of the council. And we're saying that this must happen as a matter of urgency. It just requires the Security Council members to come together as part of the reform to give the instructions to the Secretary General, who spoke again very eloquently in support of this reform and said it's time for us to do that, for them to adopt these changes. And then Africa will make a determination on who our representatives and who the permanent seats holders will be at the Security Council. We've also called for an increase in representation in the non-permanent category as well for Africa. So we're just calling for a total overhaul of the Security Council system, for Africa's voice to be reflected in terms of our size, our positionality. As we've said as well, over 6% of issues in front of the Security Council are about Africa. And so it just doesn't make sense that we don't have the kinds of seats and the place at the table that we should have.
Isaac Kaleji, I mean, what Sierra Leone is pushing as they have the chair of the UNSC is really not new, right? I mean, many African countries are of the same opinion. Ghana has also been quite vocal. What is Ghana's position, and how has it, you know, in its own way, tried to push for this?
The position of Ghana is not different from what Sierra Leone is pushing now. Of course, Ghana, when it had this chance also to hold the rotational chairmanship of the Security Council as a non-permanent member, obviously also made comments related to this. And the whole of Africa has been on this agenda for some time now, that there's a need for Africa to be at that table and to have a say, and not just to be there occasionally and it's say it doesn't really matter. So it's a combination of a lot of advocacy in the past, like the minister said. And I think at this time around, what has changed is that it appears that this motion is before the Security Council, really, to see whether there will be a solution to it. And like he said, I mean, we've seen the US, for example, promise that they will support such a motion when it gets to the Security Council. So it is now to see whether indeed the key members, don't forget, it's not only Africa that is under represented at the Security Council. There are other regions that have also been pushing for this kind of recognition. So we hope to see, and I think the world is trying to see what will happen, the chairmanship of Sierra Leone, whether indeed this will come to the day of really happen, will materialize at this time. It is important to also say that it's now time for us to see whether African countries can really push these key countries. Like you mentioned, China and Russia may have expressed the interest, but there's a need for us to see whether they will indeed vote for it this time around.
Right. I mean, as we all agree, the AU, African Union, and, you know, generally many African countries are on the same page that this has to happen, and they've been pushing for many years now. Isaac, what have you figured in your years of covering to be the stumbling block? What responses have we been getting so far that has made this prove futile so far?
Well, in the past, there's not been much interest actually from the key countries on the Security Council, talking about the US, China, Russia, of course, who are really the key rivals on the seat, really, to be able to make this materialize. And also in the past, we've not had a galvanized kind of voice from Africa to say it's time. And I would say, for example, in the past until now, we've not even seen them as a continent say that China, you have interest in Africa, Russia, you have an interest in Africa, US, you have an interest in Africa, and even the UK, you need to get us this or we won't do business with you. I mean, we've not had that kind of conversation, but I think that now it is changing because Africa thinks that it has been underrepresented for a long time. And like I said, again, yeah, we've seen the the UN Secretary General actually support this. We've seen countries like you mentioned, China and Russia, and even the US has spoken. President Biden has said they support this. It's high time. So I think the world has thought through and realized that it's high time this is represented or this is taken seriously.
Right. Mr. Barr, to add to what Kaleji was saying, what leveraging power really does Africa have to push for a permanent representation and a veto?
The balance of power has changed significantly. The very legitimacy of the Security Council is what is up for debate now, because you cannot have an institution that, as the Secretary General himself said, 60% of the issues in front of the Security Council concern Africa. 40% of peacekeepers are now from the continent, and yet the continent is systematically excluded from the very important positioning of the composition of this institution itself. So I think in terms of leverage, what you saw with the presence of His Excellency President Bio at the Security Council and representing his colleagues, I think it's important to say that he's a chair of the Committee of 10 for the Reform of the Security Council, which is an African Union committee that came together and said, we need to push this agenda. It's also that what he's speaking is the common position of Africa. I think what we saw as well in New York earlier this month was that the China representative, when they spoke, said that they have a favorable opinion on this position and they are in full support. We had from Russia, so we have had from France, we've had from the United Kingdom, we've had from the United States. So I think that the consensus is clear, and this is a consensus that is emerging not just from the substance of the debates and the quality of the argument that Africa has, that is, I think, frankly, just too compelling, but it's also a moral issue. And because of the unity of our position as well, I think it's almost impossible for them to now ignore us. The matter is now in front of the Security Council, thanks to Sierra Leone's leadership on this issue. But we expect that there to be movement.
We expect movements, as you say. We would have to wait and see exactly what type of movements they will be. Will it be movements in terms of, an African representation, permanent representation on the Security Council? If that happens, that would be great. If that does not happen, is there an alternative to that?
No. This is not a conversation about settlement. I think what we're asking for is 2 permanent seats. And also an increase of 2 additional seats on the non-permanent category, that's 4. I think obviously there's a conversation that's happening and there are calls for reform. And I think your colleague, you just mentioned that it's not just Africa that is underrepresented. There are other regions of the world as well. This is now a conversation about the composition of the Security Council. And again, as I've said, it's a conversation about the legitimacy of the Security Council. If in that conversation about legitimacy and composition and what makes sense, there's no doubt that the minimum is Africa must be fully represented and must enjoy the full powers of the Security Council in its next iteration to reflect this power. Now, there will be conversations about what the number is, how many, and what's the procedure of doing that. But I think we're very confident in our position and what we've articulated. And you can see as well the coverage that it's gotten. And as I pointed out as well, the endorsement of all the 5 permanent members and all the other work that we have done in mobilizing support from across the world.
Isaac, it seems we've come very far in pushing for this. We talking about Africa as a whole, the African Union. So let's hypothetically say that it happens. What would be the benefit to, one, the continent of Africa, and to the UNSC?
It's not just about the composition, like the minister said. It's even about the role of the council itself. Because you see members taking their vetoing decisions based on their interests. So even if Africa has a permanent seat and a member will veto decisions that will be taken, obviously, it still doesn't achieve the same result that Africa is pushing for. So the two reforms must work together. And of course, if Africa has a seat there, permanent, obviously, it speaks volumes that Africa can also have a say, can also be heard and the voice be heard. Of course, we also don't know which countries in Africa will have that seat, because it's not like Africa is going as an African Union having a seat. It ought to be countries. But I think that significant will be that the composition itself and the role it plays also is reformed. So if majority votes for a decision to be taken for a ceasefire or for any other thing to be to happen across the world, that can happen irrespective of if some members have interest and want to veto it.
Mr. Ba, Kaleji mentioned something interesting about the push is not to have the African Union as a union have a permanent seat, but to have one or two African countries, as it seems you're pushing for, Sierra Leone spearheading this for now. How would that work? Would it be two African countries permanently on the seat, or is there going to be some sort of rotation within Africa to decide that one or two countries that represent? Give us an idea of how that could work.
I think what His Excellency President Bill said at the UN, and he's been asked this question multiple times, he said, let's deal with that when we get there. Let's have the allocation of the seats to the African continent, and we have an institution in Africa, the African Union, who will sit within the union and say what makes sense for us, whether we'll have one permanent seat there that will be permanent, and whether we'll have a second one that will be rotational, or whether the council will say it makes sense for these two countries to represent us on there, and we create a mechanism for us to be reflected. I think we're just saying as a people, as a continent, it is just fair, it's imperative, it's a question of legitimacy, it's a question of what is right about this institution, that we must have two permanent seats. And as Isaac said, it's not just about the seat, it's also making sure that there are reforms accompanying us being on the table. Because if we're just there, and yet other people can just veto everything that we do, it doesn't really make a big difference.
Right. So key thing is to get the seats allocated to the continent first. And then, as you say, the rest will be sorted out by members of the African Union. Let's touch a bit on how the current state of the UNSC has affected or impacted African countries, Mr. Ba.
Well, I mean, I think the very foundation of democracy is that, taxation without representation is unjust, and it's a legitimacy crisis. What has happened is Africa has been disproportionately on the table of the Security Council. Sierra Leone knows too well about this. In the past 20 years, we have been, significantly on the agenda, and not just us, but other countries when it comes to matters of peace and security. But I think what also gets lost in this conversation sometimes is it seems as if we're only there because we're going through a crisis or because we're quote-unquote a problematic continent. It's not true. Actually, in terms of also contribution to peace, we are also at the forefront in terms of the countries who are the leading contributors of peacekeepers, for example, just ideas for peace building, of solving sub-regional issues, the level of organizing within the continent. If you look at our sub-regional blocks, the support that we have done and mobilized amongst ourselves to create cultures of peace within the sub-region. So in terms of our contribution to peace building, as a continent, we have a very, very proud history. But what has happened is the Security Council has been seen as this foreign. Look, the Security Council is a product of a post-World War II consensus. And it is essentially a seat of the so-called victors of that time. That era cannot be past its date right now. It's a bygone era, and it no longer reflects the realities of today's geopolitics. It no longer reflects the positioning of the African continent. So what you have right now is you have an old boys clubs, for lack of a better term, of all these countries that are seated there, we maintain this veto power with different kinds of coalitions. And then you have the reality, which is a continent like Africa, whose affairs have been discussed and debated all the time, who doesn't have a voice when it comes to making critical decisions, who they will have, big decisions, vetoes, and affecting peace and security as well, that have huge effect on us, on our daily existence, and yet we don't have a voice. So I think the impact is clear for all, and this is why you've seen this momentum from the rest of Africa that started from years on saying, There's need for reform. We've been mobilizing. We've adopted a common position. And now we have Sierra Leone using the privilege of our presidency of the Security Council to champion that, to push that forward, to table it actually at the Security Council and say, the time is now.
The time is now. And Isaac, that has been Ghana's position. That has been generally many African countries' position, as we've highlighted so far. Is there a sort of timeline that is expected that we will find a solution to this, or that we will hear confirmation from the UNSC that, okay, now it's time for Africa?
I think we'll have to use the presidency of Sierra Leone now to see whether indeed the council is serious about what is being seen, especially some of the members have been saying that they support this. They think it's high time this happens, not just for Africa, for other parts of the world that have been underrepresented in the council. The hope will be that it should have happened yesterday, but it hasn't. So the hope is that it should happen soon. And once this has been the key agenda of Sierra Leone, it should happen under its presidency. That should be the hope. And if it doesn't happen under the presidency of Sierra Leone, obviously it means that the members really are not committed to this, because then obviously it delays. So the hope is that this happens now that the momentum is there, not just for Africa, but for other parts of the world that have been less underrepresented.
But Isaac, does it make it even more difficult for Africa's case? For the sake of discussion, right? Is it more difficult for Africa to make a case considering the recent spate of coups on the continent? And I know Mr. Bass says that when the seats are allocated, Africa will find a way to, you know, make sure it has two representations all the time. But is it making our case difficult, looking at security situations on the continent, the recent spate of coups, and other challenges?
I don't think so. I mean, the world will always have global issues, challenges here and there. I mean, even the most advanced democracies still have issues. I mean, the UK just had protests. The US had issues about attempted coup. I mean, it's going to happen in Russia. It's having a war or conflict with Ukraine. So it's going to be there. We are not going to have a world of perfection. But the fact is that, I mean, it doesn't mean that various parts of the world should not have a say in a global body like the United Nations.
Mr. Bart, do you have something to add
yes,
to that?
I actually wanted to say that, and I agree with Isaac, that actually it's the opposite. The developments you're seeing on the continent do make the case, not undermine the case, that we need to be on the Security Council so that we can be part of resolving these issues. These are interconnected issues. These are global issues now. What affects one affects the other. And the Security Council needs to be a platform where we can truly address these issues from a position of true knowledge, not from a position of, oh, we have some group of five supervisors who somehow assume to themselves some moral positioning to essentially serve as prefects of the rest of us. That's not the world we live in anymore. I think Isaac eloquently just mentioned, all these countries have their own challenges, if it's war, if it's democracy challenges and all of that. And yet, that's exactly why you want to make sure that the Security Council reflects the reality of the world, reflects the reality of the different experiences that we bring. And yes, as I've mentioned, while Africa's challenges are sometimes exaggerated and presented as if they are unique to us, we also have a lot of positive things going for us. We also have the example of resolving some of these problems. Sierra Leone just showed an example of how post an elections, we can have a peaceful resolution of those issues. And that's not, some developed countries cannot say that. And, you know, they have chosen different paths in terms of how to resolve their issues. So I think all of those things make the case, not just not undermine the case. They make the case, they strengthen our case for Africa to be fully represented.
There are those that are listening that will probably say, and I know we've already said that, it seems like we have a much stronger case now than before. And some would also argue that it's not really rocket science, though. The world has changed for a long time after World War II, 1945, when the Security Council was set up. So is it just a case of disrespecting the continent of Africa or some level of colonial era inequity still hanging on? Why has it even taken so long to be taken more seriously now, Mr. Barr?
I think change of any kind is difficult, and especially progressive change. And I think what we've learned as students of history is that power doesn't just give up power willingly. Oftentimes you need to kind of organize and demand and confront. And this is a case of power. You're right. It's a case of, you know, there's a consensus from the world, and the conservative position was, let's just maintain the status quo as is. And also the perception of Africa as, oh, the other continent. We've always been the forgotten continent, the continent that was perceived as just being a recipient of other people's both intellectual and other largesse. But that's changed again. We have a system now that does not reflect today's world, and that does not reflect the reality of how we are situated as a continent. What we're saying is we have our eyes on the ball, and that means Africa must have two permanent seats we must either eliminate the veto, or those powerless seats should also come with those with the right to veto. We must increase our representation as well in the non-permanent category. It's a very simple request, and we think it's a legitimate one.
Isaac, I'm going to come to you for your final words on this. Remind us all why this will be so important for the continent.
Well, it will be so important because Africa, like the minister said, has been underrepresented for a long time. Africa has been seen as just the small boys of the big boys. It appears that we're not grown to really play with the big boys. I think that Africa has come of age now.
Okay. Chenoba, Minister of Information and Civic Education for the Republic of Sierra Leone. Thank you very much for your time. Also, DW correspondent in Accra, Ghana, Isaac Kaleji. Thank you very much, guys. The arguments for reforming the Security Council highlight the need for a more representative UNSC that can effectively address current global challenges. But will all those that wield veto powers allow it to happen? Only time will tell. That's it from this edition of Africa Link. Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Click follow so you don't miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Josie Mahachi. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW News.
I am Isaac Kaleji with DW News. The UN Food Agency World Food Programme, WFP, is investigating two of its top officials in Sudan who are accused of fraud, according to Reuters News Agency. The two also allegedly concealed information from donors about the WFP's ability to deliver food aid to civilians as the country faces a major hunger crisis. Investigators are looking at whether these WFP staff sought to hide the alleged role of Sudan's army in obstructing aid. Sudan has witnessed a brutal 16-month war between the army and rival paramilitary who are seeking for control of the country. Nigeria's Hydrological Services Agency has warned of more heavy rainfalls after weeks of flooding in the country. At least 170 people have died, with over 200,000 people displaced by the floods. Over 100,000 hectares of farmland have also been destroyed. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer is in Germany for his first bilateral visit since taking office 7 weeks ago. At a press briefing, Starmer said the two nations will sign a new treaty by the end of year. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who hosted Starmer, praised the strong ties between the two countries.
I would like to take the opportunity to congratulate you once again on becoming Prime Minister. Germany and the United Kingdom are good friends, close partners, and trusted allies. The both of us will be working hard to ensure that this relationship will continue to thrive.
You are listening to the news on Africa Link, brought to you by DW. South African billionaire Johan Rupert is now Africa's richest person, according to the latest data from the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. He overtakes Nigeria's Aliko Dangote, who has held the position for some time now. Mr. Rupert, who controls Richemont, one of the world's largest luxury goods firms, has a net worth of $14.3 billion. Dangote's fortune fell by $1.7 billion this year, giving him a net worth of $13.4 billion. Rupert is ranked at 147th position globally on the Billionaires Index. Elon Musk is the wealthiest person on the Bloomberg Index with a net worth of $236 billion. And in sports, Paris is hosting the opening ceremony for the 2024 Paralympic Games today. The Games, which will end on September 8, will see 549 gold medals being awarded. Nearly 2 million tickets have been sold, with about 500,000 still available. And that was DW News, brought to you by Isaac Kaleji.
for mine.